श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय। श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय। श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय। श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय। श्री ब्रजनाथ हलदार की जय। नृसिंह भगवान की जय। तिरुपाप महोर शक्ति श्री वृंदावन दास ठाकुर की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गोपिमानंद Pranam, good afternoon to all of you. Thanks for coming one more time. Today we are having our last meeting here in Kansas and celebrating the divine disappearance of Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur. Ki Jai. So the idea was to share some words in commemoration of his Tirubab Mahotsav, which is a way to refer to this particular type of celebration, which is somehow a type of festival of celebration. Sometimes they are called Birahotsav. Biraha means separation, and Utsav means festival, celebration. So a celebration of separation. But separation implies a type of union also. No? Union in separation. The very word Biraha in Sanskrit, which means separation, also can mean, if you divide it etymologically, Biraha. So Raha means union, and B means a very special type of. So Biraha means a very special type of union, but we call it separation. Because as we know, when we are a separation from the beloved, our heart grows fonder, as they say. You know, separation makes the heart grow fonder. So all your emotions and feelings for the beloved internalize and start like to condense inside of you. When you meet the person, physically, if you will, all those feelings externalize and are expressed towards the person. But in separation, all those things become internalized and start to upgrade themselves, if you will. So there is a purpose in separation, of course. Without separation, there is no union. If you will, if you are always with the person, you cannot speak of union because you are already there. So separation and union create this unique dynamic of love, both of them upgrading each other, if you will. So in our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, we are quite keen on celebrating these types of things that appear in our Vaishnava Panjika, in our calendar. There are many celebrations throughout the year. There are many appearances and disappearances of different personalities. And as I always like to say, it's important to try to take some time to get to know who are all of them. Because sometimes we might feel, or might think, oh, okay, today, well, it's not Janmashtami, it's not Gaur Purnima, so, yeah, it's the appearance of, I don't know who, but it's not that important. It's not Radhastami or Nityananda Trayodas. So, let me know when there is the big feast going on, something like that. But the point is that each one of these personalities that we celebrate in our calendar, all of them are like personifications of divine love. So in one way we can say they are embodying the goal we want to attain. I mean, our goal in life is to attain prem, divine love. So if there are a bunch of personalities who have attained that, who are a very personification of that, and I am willing to attain that at some point, I should be quite like preoccupied with knowing about who they are and what's their life about, because they themselves are like a portal into my ultimate attainment. So it's very important that we spend some time every time we have some celebration in our calendar, the appearance day of whoever, disappearance day of any great personality, try to get to know more in detail their life and teachings. So today we're trying to do that in the context of, again, this festival in separation, which again expresses some form of suffering, but as Srila Siddhar Maharaj will say, there is the possibility of sweetness in suffering. You say, pain can be sweet also. He will quote a famous poet, I don't remember his name now, but he says that the saddest tales are those who tell us, the sweetest tales are those who tell us of the saddest stories or something like that. No? Or like, I don't know, in old India, a sadhu comes in the village and starts to do a 1-week narration of the Ramayana. And it's pretty tragic if you read the Ramayana, one after the other. No? When it seems that everything is okay, something else. Sita is kidnapped, or Sita is banished, or whatever. No? So the whole week he's narrating all that, and all the village is crying. Crying. But the week is over, Ramayana narration is finished, Sadhu lives and continues his journey, and everyone starts to cry, because they cannot continue crying by hearing that. So they are crying, but there is also sweetness in that. No? Like when sometimes, I don't know, someone may be seeing a movie and they are crying and crying, and if I come and enter it, why you are crying? Stop that movie. You say, no, stop that movie. But you are crying. No, but I will explain you later. Let me finish. And you continue like, Of course, I'm giving an example from this platform, but what to speak there. So when Mahaprabhu, these days we have been speaking of Mahaprabhu's conversation with Roy Ramananda, after Roy Ramananda established which is the highest goal and the practice to attain it, they had like some short Q&A. Now Mahaprabhu started to ask Ramananda brief questions with brief answers. How to say in English? Chit-chat or something like that?
Chit-chat.
Okay. So almost the first question, almost, not the first one, but almost the first question that Mahaprabhu asks Ramananda Roy is, what's the highest form of pain?
Wow.
Interesting. So Ramananda Roy replies, Krishna Bhakta Viraha Vina Dukkha Nahi Ar. Apart from separation from the Vaishnava, I don't know about any other form of pain, he says. Interesting. So our problem is that still we find suffering in other things, and we don't find maybe much suffering in the separation. So gradually we have to attune, refine our idea, notion of suffering. Like we were seeing yesterday at night, no? This video from Bhakti Vallabh Tirtha Maharaj, whose disappearance day was yesterday also, and he will enter the bhajan kutir of his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Daita Madhava Goswami Maharaj. And of course his Gurudev already passed away, so he just entered into his bhajan kutir, who was arranged with all the things that Srila Madhava Maharaj used, and Srila Tirtha Maharaj was just cry and cry like a baby, no? In front of the picture of his Guru only. And cry, Ha Gurudev, Ha Gurudev, Ha Gurudev, Ha Gurudev, and cry and cry. But we were sort of so attracted seeing that, basically. No? For some particular reason, that catch our heart. There was something sweet there. No? There was love, basically. So there is love no matter which form the situation takes. Union, separation, pain, happiness, all the things somehow become secondary. Because love gives new meaning to everything, gives new purpose. With love, you have full purpose. In Sanskrit, the word for purpose is artha. And love is called Parama Purushartha, the greatest sense of meaning that you can find in the human life. So actually, as Viktor Frankl will say in his Logotherapy, he will say, man is not after happiness, man is after meaning and purpose. Even if you are suffering, but you can draw meaning from that situation, you will be nourished. But if you are happy, and you cannot draw meaning from your happiness, there's not much purpose there. That's still superficial. So anyhow, today we are celebrating Vrindavan Das Thakur's divine separation, this celebration of union in separation. So some words about him, about his life, about his pastimes, about his, especially his authorship of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, for which he is mainly known for. But let's begin a little bit with the with the chronological genealogical tree behind himself. Now, who is his mother, and so on. Now, so, as you may know or recall, or just getting to know now, Vrindavan Das Thakur's mother is called Narayani Devi. Narayani Devi, who at the same time, let's connect a little bit. Krishna Lila and Gaur Lila, also who is who on each side, if you will, because also we have this type of parallels mostly by Kavi Karnapur's book Gaur Ganodesha Deepika. So Narayani Devi is one, how to say in English, like nurse in Krishna Lila, who acted like a nurse for Krishna. Kilimbika, that's his name. There's one called Ambika, who is quite well known. She used to feed Krishna. And Kilimbika in Krishna Lila is the younger sister of Ambika. So the two of them were nurses of Krishna in Krishna Lila. And they used also to eat Krishna's remnants. So we will see how now Narayani in Gaur Lila, she will somehow continue with her practice in Krishna Lila and receive the remnants from Mahaprabhu, basically. Mm-hmm. So Kilimbika is Narayani in Gaur Lila, and Ambika, the older sister, is Malini Devi in Gaur Lila, who is Srivast Pandit's wife. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of the family tree, family picture. Mm-hmm. So it is said that Mahaprabhu, when Narayani Devi is the son, as we will see, of what's her name? Nalina Pandit?
The daughter.
So Srivast Thakur has many brothers. One of them is called Nalina Pandit. So this Nalina Pandit I'm confusing you a lot. Nalina Pandit was married with Narayani Devi.
Oh. Hmm?
And from them, Vrindavan Das Thakur was born.
Sister-in-law.
Hmm. Yeah. So, Narayani Devi, when Mahaprabhu was executing his pastime, was a young girl at that time. Hmm. So it is said that Mahaprabhu used to express very keen affection to her whenever she saw her, and especially mentioned that at one point Mahaprabhu was chewing betel nut remnants from the Vishnu deity. He was honoring that. General Vaishnavas do not chew that, but sometimes in some occasions it is offered to the deity and they honor as remnants. So Mahaprabhu was doing that and he gave that to Narayani Devi. Hmm? So again, she was honoring some of the remnants of Mahaprabhu as she used to do in Krishna Lila. And some mentioned that it is after chewing this that she became pregnant with Vrindavan Das Thakur.
Oh, no? No.
Some mention of that is there, basically. Hmm? And there is one pastime when Narayani, Vrindavan Das Thakur's mother, was 4 years old, that Mahaprabhu showed Mahaprakash Lila in Srivastpan. This is a famous pastime that is narrated later in Chaitanya Bhagavat, where Mahaprabhu for 21 hours without stopped his Mahaprakash means the great manifestation or the great revelation. Mahaprabhu entered into Ishvara Bhav or the mood of I'm God. Now he sat on the throne in the altar and started to ask the devotees, worship me. And he started to reveal himself in different forms according to the mood of each devotee. So Murari Gupta was there, who is Hanuman in Ramlila. And Mahaprabhu will show himself as Ramachandra. And Murari offered prayers in that connection. And like this with different devotees for 21 hours without stop. So it is said that in that moment when he entered into that mood, before all these 21 hours started, he was at Srivas Angam, the house of Srivas Pandit, and he was entering into this mood and he said to Srivas Pandit, bring everyone from your family here, including Narayani, who had 4 years. No? So all the family was in front of them, and by this time, Chand Kasi was presenting some obstacles to the Sankirtan, as you may have heard. No? The Muslim governor and they were breaking of a mridanga and some threatening going on. If you continue, we will convert you into Muslims and so on. So Mahaprabhu wanted to reassure his associates, said, nothing will happen, nothing to fear regarding the Chand Kasi. This is just previous to the Chand Kasi pastime when they went to his house with torch and so on. So Mahaprabhu would share with them which was his plan for defeating the Kasi, basically. And he said, and to give you further reassurance, I will show who I am, how I will protect you. So then he shows this Mahaprakash Lila, showing I am Bhagavan, basically. So it is said that he will make animals and every person chant and fall in ecstasy, and that immediately. He will give the instruction, and whoever received the instruction. So one of them, Mahaprabhu was in full Aishwarya Bhav, and he's telling Narayani, she was there like a 4-year-old girl. Try to imagine the situation. Mahaprabhu looks at Narayana and says, Narayana, chant Krishna Nam, I'm falling in ecstasy. That was instruction. Generally, we don't receive that instruction, maybe to be in ecstasy, which is the button to press. No? But Mahaprabhu was given the instruction, wasn't powering Narayana, who, of course, as we see, she's eternal associate of Krishna, so she was there already. No? It's not that she attained something she didn't have before, she was already there. So chant Krishna name and cry in ecstasy. So Narayana, 4-year-old little girl, received the instruction and immediately said, Ah, Krishna. No? And started to fall on the ground and rolling in ecstasy and exhibiting all the symptoms of prem. So this gives further reassurance to all the Navadvipa Vasis that there won't be any major hindrance to our Sankirtan movement, basically. These are some of the main pastimes connected to Narayani, who is the mother of Vrindavan Das Thakur. So again, Narayani was, how do you say in Sanskrit, niece of Srivas Thakur?
Sister-in-law,
sorry.
Yeah. She was married to his brother, right?
No, I'm messing all the thing with you. Sorry, she was the daughter of Srivas Thakur's brother. So there
she
was.
Okay. She was the niece. That's what I thought.
Okay, okay. Sorry for the mistake to all connect. Yeah.
She was married to
Sorry. Yeah. Right. So Narayani was the daughter of Srivas Thakur's brother, called Nalina Pandit, and Vrindavan Das Thakur is the son of Narayani. Then we have I need some picture with all the genealogical tree, where who is who. No? So yeah. And the father of Vrindavan Das Thakur is called by Kunthanath Das. And it's said that he passed away while Vrindavan Das Thakur was still in the womb of Narayani. So before he was born, he passed away. No? And it is said that both Narayani and Vrindavan Das Thakur eventually moved to the house of Srivas Pandit when Vrindavan Das Thakur's father died, basically. So there are different opinions as to where Vrindavan Das Thakur was born. Some of them refer to one village called Mamgachi, which generally is the main opinion where he's born. And of course, sometimes you go to India, you have these things that you will go to different villages and you have, here was born this person. You go to another village, here was born the same person. And where? Well, here, come here. That's the donation box. So there are different opinions in some cases. And others say he was born in one place called Kumarhat. But whatever the case, it is said that Vrindavan Das Thakur eventually moved to one place called Denur. And in that place called Denur is the, what it is sometimes called, the Sripat of Vrindavan Das Thakur,
the temple.
Yeah, the place where he established himself for mainly. Now, maybe he was born somewhere, but moved eventually to this place, and that was his place of residence, basically. So who is Vrindavan Das Thakur? Now, we mentioned who was Narayani Devi. So it is said that Vrindavan Das Thakur, Srila Kavikarnapur in Gorganadesh Deepika, he says, he's Vyasadev. So we have the Vyasa of Gaur Lila, if you will, in the form of Vrindavan Das Thakur. But also, interestingly, and this is part of what Kavikarnapur mentions, he speaks that also Vrindavan Das Thakur is one gopa called Kushumapida, one friend of Krishna in Vrindavan. We say this gopa Kushumapida has entered also the body of Vrindavan Das Thakur to perform certain actions. So that's an interesting point, because as we will see, Vrindavan Das Thakur is totally into Sakya Rasa as well.
Right.
And if we connect him with this identity as a gopa, of course, well, that's a parallel very, very, very nicely. Vrindavan Das Thakur used to worship a pair of deities of Gaur Nityananda that can still be found in this place, Mamgachi, which sometimes some people mention that's where he was born. And the temple is under the care of Chaitanya Gaudiya Math, the mission of Bhaktivallabha Tirtha Maharaj that we saw yesterday. Yeah? So Vrindavan Das Thakur is considered to be the last disciple of Nityananda Prabhu. So Nityananda Prabhu was his own guru. So No? Try to imagine being a disciple of Sri Nityananda. So Vrindavanadas Thakur was his last disciple. And under the order of Nityananda Prabhu, he wrote the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. He wrote the pastimes of Nityananda Prabhu in his book called Chaitanya Bhagavat, very famous biography of Sri Chaitanya. And he also wrote a number of songs, a few of them. And sometimes there are some other books that are ascribed, you say, ascribed to Vrindavanadas Thakur, but actually by most of devotees as scholars, it is considered that he only wrote Chaitanya Bhagavat, more than enough. But the point is, generally, that's the book ascribed to him officially. So this is a very interesting book, and of course, we will speak about that in some moments. And it's a book where we will find, again, a lot of this personal affinity that Vrindavanadas Thakur had for Sakyaraj, for Nityananda Prabhu, for his Gurudev, basically. As we spoke the other day, for those who may say, our lineage is only about Madhurya Bhav, of course it's mostly saturated by its influence, but we find here and there, Brahma. If we want to connect Narad Muni, Madhu Mangal, as we said the other day, Vyasa, Vrindavanadas Thakur, the very first three members of our parampara that you generally mention are somehow connected with Sakya Bhav. And of course, not only these three. So, Vrindavanadas Thakur shows this very clear affinity towards Sakya Rasa and Nityananda Prabhu, to the point that, interestingly, if you study Chaitanya Bhagavat, in the beginning of the book, he kind of summarizes what he will be speaking about throughout the work. So he mentions, I will speak about this, then after that I will speak about this, and so on. So you have some idea, okay, this will be the main topics. So you go through the book, and when you reach the end of the book, and you go back to the summary, you're like, but not everything is being told that he announced in the beginning. And what's the reason? Interestingly, at the end of the book, Vrindavanadas Thakur starts to describe the pastimes of Nityananda Prabhu in such a detail, and he gets so absorbed, lost there. Lost and found. End of the book. And again, this, technically speaking, is considered a defect, but in a deeper sense, is considered an ornament. No, because you can say, no, he announced something, but he didn't write about that. Yes, but why he didn't write about that? What's the reason? Some failure or some overflowing of divine emotion? And of course, it's the latter. No? So he got absorbed in Nitai Kata, and Chaitanya Bhagavat ends there. Also, of course, Chaitanya Bhagavat is very much focused on Mahaprabhu's early lilas in Navadvip, and not so much about Mahaprabhu's anti-lilas, or the later lilas in Jagannath Puri. So that is to say, one of the main reasons why Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, these are the two main biographies of Mahaprabhu. There are seven main biographies of Mahaprabhu. The first one written by Murari Gupta, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Charita Mahakavya. Then there are two written by Kavi Karnapur. There is one by Lochandas Thakur, Chaitanya Mangal. There is another Chaitanya Mangal by one Jayananda. We have five there. And then Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Charitamrita. And these two are for us the most important ones. And of the two, sometimes one it is said that is the most important, sometimes the other. No? For different reasons. We'll speak about that also. But again, the point is that Vrindavanadas Thakur got so absorbed in the early pastimes of Mahaprabhu and the pastimes of Nityananda Prabhu that the book ended there. And certain sections were not described. So, eventually, the devotees went to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and prayed, please complete the narration. Complete and describe in further detail mostly the second half of Mahaprabhu's life, from his acceptance of sannyas till his passing from this world. The Jagannath Puri Leelas, basically. So that's why when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami begins his work of Chaitanya Charitamrita, over and over again deferring to Vrindavan Das Thakur's Chaitanya Bhava, which is prior to his Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur mentioned that this, interestingly said, the Chaitanya Charitamrita deals more with Mahaprabhu's pastimes as a sannyasi in Jagannath Puri, in Nilachal, and therefore there can be accepted as a supplement to Vrindavan Das Thakur's Chaitanya Bhagavat. So in one sense, Chaitanya Bhagavat is considered more important. It's predating Chaitanya Charitamrita, is focusing on the Navadvip pastimes, which for us are the ultimate goal to attain in Navadvip, not Puri pastimes, but Navadvip pastimes. In that sense, we could say it's more important, and as we will see, it's more emphasis on Lila and Rasa in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Chaitanya Charitamrita, in another sense, is more important because it very clearly establishes the ontology of Mahaprabhu, like describes in detail why Mahaprabhu came to the world, which are the three desires that make Krishna wonder, I want to taste Radha Bhava, and all this background story to Mahaprabhu's descent. This is not mentioned in Chaitanya Bhagavat. This is disclosed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So for certain reasons, some may say Chaitanya Bhagavat is supreme, Chaitanya Charitamrita is supreme, and both are right, as we say the other day. So there is place for variety, that's the point. No? Variety is the spice of life, as they say. But again, if you go to Chaitanya Charitamrita over and over again, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is venerating Vrindavan Das Thakur. Let me share with you a pair of verses from Adi Lila, chapter 13, verses 48, 49, in which he refers to that, no? And presents what's his attempt to complement Chaitanya Bhagavat. Chaitanya Lilara Vyasa Dasa Vrindavan Madhura Kariya Lila Karila Racham Granta Vishara Baye Chadila Ye Stana Sei Sei Stan Kichu Kariva Vyakan. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur, the authorized writer of the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is as good as Srila Vyasadev. Again, this point is made. He has described the pastimes in such a way as to make them sweeter and sweeter. Being afraid of his books becoming too voluminous, he left some places without vivid descriptions. I shall try to fill those places as far as possible. So here Krishna Das Kaviraj mentions other reason for Vrindavan Das Thakur not overextending, if you will, being afraid of the book becoming too voluminous. We hear that expression many times in our acharyas, like being afraid of the book becoming too voluminous. I won't quote the 108 verses I have in mind to substantiate my point a little bit more. So let's go to the next topic. Jiva Goswami makes that point a lot in his Sandarvas. And he's right, his Sandarvas are quite voluminous. So if he will quote all that he has in mind to further substantiate his point, maybe nobody may read the book completely in one lifetime or something. So we have some ideas in this connection here in relation to the Chaitanya Bhagavat. So the Chaitanya Bhagavat, some further words about Chaitanya Bhagavat. Chaitanya Bhagavat was originally called Chaitanya Mangal. No? Mangal means like auspicious. So Chaitanya Mangal. But eventually it was modified because there was another Chaitanya Mangal, as I just mentioned. Actually there were two more, but the most well-known one is the one from Lochan Das Thakur, Chaitanya Mangal. So as to, for the audience not to mistake and take one book for the other, he called the book Chaitanya Bhagavat, which in the words of my Guru Maharaj is like the natural continuation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. You have Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Bhagavatam. Because that's the natural sequence, as we mentioned the other day. The Bhagavad Gita concludes where Srimad Bhagavatam starts. Srimad Bhagavatam concludes when Gaur Lila starts. So one is a natural continuation. And Bhagavad Gita concludes Sarva Dharma Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. That's the beginning. That's almost the last verse of the Gita. That's almost the first verse of the Bhagavatam, second verse. Dharma Prayito Kaita Votra. Basically the same idea. And last verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nama Sankirtanam Jasya Sarva Bhava Pranashanam Pranamoduka Samanam Tam Namami Harim Pra. Offering pranam to Hari who is glorified by Nam Sankirtan. That's the last verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Glorification of Nam Sankirtan. Fin, end of the book. Try to imagine. You read the whole book and it ends Nam Sankirtan. So you're like, oh, so is there any sequel to this? Oh yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam takes you to Chaitanya Bhagavatam. And there you have Nam Sankirtan in every line and every page. So, as we have this connection, no? Navadvipa is connected to Vrindavan, Krishna Leela is connected to Gaur Leela, therefore Srimad Bhagavatam, which is all about Krishna Leela, is totally connected with Chaitanya Bhagavatam, which is about Gaur Leela. So this Chaitanya Bhagavat again is describing the now the pastimes. It's not overtly saying you are expected to enter here for eternity. Chaitanya Bhagavat is not speaking in detail about the possibility of eternal residence in Navadvip, but indirectly it's pointing to that. There are many verses in Chaitanya Bhagavat which speak Mahaprabhu descended from his abode on earth. So what's that abode, basically? No? And if you worship Mahaprabhu, you will attain his abode in the spiritual world. So what's that about? Abode, basically. So by excessive focus on the Navadvipa Leela, excessive in the good term, sense of the term, the Chaitanya Bhagavat is pointing to this possibility. Now there is a place to eternally reside in Navadvipa, Golok Navadvipa, or Nitya Navadvipa, as you may have heard. On one side, you can reside eternally in Krishna Leela, as a gopi or as a gopa, and you can have a parallel existence in Gaur Leela as a Brahmin, boy serving Mahaprabhu. Interesting prospect. So, again, this Chaitanya Bhagavat is mostly about, it's a Rasa Shastra. Now, there's not much philosophy there, there's not much theology nor ontology, but it's just Leela, Leela Gata, descriptions of the. So it's rasa without ontology, we could say. And Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's lots of theology, ontology, philosophy. And of course there is description of leelas also. But there is a very heavy foundation, philosophical, theological foundation to make the case for Mahaprabhu being Krishna. Which again, it's a pretty audacious project. Like in the sense of, at that time, I mean, in India you go, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, in India you have a new avatar at the end of the corner every single day, in the village. That is an avatar of Shiva, it's an avatar of Mahavishnu, this is performing Rasa Leela with the girls of the village, and everyone is doing their own thing. So, for many Hindus at that time, okay, now this Bengali boy, Nimai, is worshipped as Krishna. I mean, you have to make a case for that. It's not just one more of the long list of self-made avatars or something. No. There's a way to explain that. So, again, that was not done by Vrindavan Das Thakur. That service was carried by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. He rightly behind began the Chaitanya Charitamrita with his Mangalacharan. My Guru Maharaj composed sacred preface trying to explore and show what the Mangalacharan of Chaitanya Charitamrita is showing. Who is Mahaprabhu? Who are every of the members of the Panchatattva? Because again, they are not just some Bengali boys. No? They are Krishna, Balarama, and so on in another Leela. But you have to refer to Shastra to prove that. It's not just like, oh, Mahaprabhu is Krishna also. Why? Because I feel. It doesn't work like that. No, like when Srila Prabhupada said, like he spoke about the spiritual law books. No?
Right.
On the books, spiritual books, like as law books, in the sense that if you are in the court and you have to present your case, you cannot say to the, how do you say?
The judge.
You cannot say, well, I think that my, or and if you are the lawyer, defending lawyer, you won't say, as my Guru Maharaj said, I think that my client is innocent because I really feel that in the depth of my heart. That's my case. I put my case to rest. I said, you won't refer to the law books and try to make you. No. I just feel very deeply that he's innocent. probably you won't win the case by that. You have to refer to the law books. So in a similar way, you cannot come and say, I feel that this Nimai boy from Nadia is not different from Krishna. Yeah, you can feel whatever you like, but to make a whole lineage and sampradaya, you have to refer to Shastra, to the law books, to find Mahaprabhu there. And that's what our Goswamis did in so many ways, you know, with their genius. They located Mahaprabhu in the spiritual map, if you will. And here is Mahaprabhu and this verse of the Bhagavatam and this verse and this other verse, and put in proper context. It makes, for us, it's normal. Again, we take it for granted. We arrive and we read, I don't know, some verses from the Bhagavatam, Krishna Varnam, Tushar Krishnam, Sangupangastra Parshadam, which means, for us, it's, oh, the Bhagavatam is speaking about Mahaprabhu here. Mm-hmm. The avatar for Kali Yuga is not black. He's always chanting the name of Krishna, is coming with his associates. And for us, yeah, that's the verse about Mahaprabhu. But apart from us Gaudias, nobody reads that verse in that way. No? So it doesn't mean that we are wrong, but it just means that we are so accustomed to how the Goswamis read the Bhagavatam. I mean, our reading of the Bhagavatam is how the Goswamis read the Bhagavatam, how they commented on the Bhagavatam, and how they have shown Mahaprabhu, for example, in the Bhagavatam. And we have inherited that in our parampara. So for us, it's like, yeah, there's Mahaprabhu there. Mm-hmm. But if you go to Madhva Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya, Bala, they will have another explanation. And then you will realize, oh, I was taking this for granted, I was accustomed to this, but actually, I mean, there's a whole work by the Goswamis for me to imbibe this so easily, if you will. No? So there's a lot of work for us to just have the books and certain particular understanding of the Shastra in connection to Mahaprabhu. So we own a lot to the to the Goswamis, including Krishna Das, Kaviraj, including Vrindavan Das Thakur. So again, Vrindavan Das Thakur is the Vyasa of Gaur Lila, no? So here comes an interesting question, because we know that Vyasa is a famous compiler. The very word Vyasa means compiler, of the Vedic literature. So we hear how Vyasa compiled the Vedas, then he kind of summarized all the Vedic, especially the Upanishadic portion in the sutras, in Vedanta Sutra, and eventually, as the Bhagavatam himself mentions, he was not satisfied with that. He felt that something was still missing. And Narada Muni appears on the scene and instructs his disciple. And he already had written or compiled some version of the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. But then Narada Muni came as chief editor or something and inspired Vyasa to edit the Bhagavatam that he had compiled at that time, and for it to become Srimad Bhagavatam, as we know it. And as we know, Narada told Vyasa, enter into Samadhi and everything will be revealed. And you will write the Bhagavatam in that language, Samadhi Bhasha, which means the language of trance. Mm-hmm. Someone asks you in which language is the Bhagavatam, it's not Sanskrit actually, it's trance, Samadhi. You know, Vyasa has these transcognitive functions and he could really see, as the Bhagavatam described, Vyasa saw. Bhagavan, so Maya Shakti, so Jiva Shakti, so Bhakti, had a darshan of all these realities, and after that all this was revealed to him. And after compiling the Bhagavat, as we know it, Srimad Bhagavatam, like the revised version, he was fully satisfied there. So he kind of retired as an author, if you will. No? Like he composed his magnum opus, as they say, no? Like, okay, now I can rest in peace. Now he found full satisfaction. So, but we could say, as an extension to that, he was retired, like when someone, in this life accomplishes certain thing he or she wants to accomplish, and eventually that happens, okay, I retire, I'm satisfied. But somehow, in time, some even more exciting prospect comes and you get out of your retirement and go back to the whatever you were doing before. So this happened with Vyasa, as Vrindavan Das Thakur. He was retired from his authorship career service, if you will. So he composed the Bhagavatam, as we say, Krishna Stuti Bhagavan Soya, establishes this ultimate truth that we are studying in the Brahma Stuti. And he went to his retreat, but eventually he reappeared back from his retreat as Vrindavan Das Thakur, no, to establish Gaura Stuti Bhagavan Swayam, if you will. Not only Krishna Stuti Bhagavan Swayam, Gaura is that same Krishna. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this way he came back, no, to the scene, to the spotlight, and trying to establish not only that Mahaprabhu is non-different from Krishna, but even that, and that's a long topic, and I'm inspired to maybe in the future write something about that, but how Mahaprabhu is the most upgraded version of Braja Krishna. That's said by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami in his Chaitanya Charitamrita. He describes, paratattvam param, he says, na Chaitanya Krishna parat jagat paratattvam paramiha. He says, no, Swayam Bhagavan. Jaiha Bhagavan Sasvayam Aham Na Chaitanya Krishna Paratita Paratattvam Paramiha. Say, okay, Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, but Mahaprabhu is not different from Krishna, and there is no higher truth than him. And then he says further in the Bhagavad, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu is Paratattva Simma, which means the highest limit of the Absolute. Because as we know, Krishna Lila, in the words of my Guru Maharaj, has its limits. As unlimited as it is, in Krishna Lila, Krishna was not able to fully relish everything he wanted. And that's why we have Gaur Lila. Because Krishna Lila, three desires remain unfulfilled for Krishna. So in the words of my Guru Maharaj, Krishna Lila is a failure for Krishna. So Gaur Lila is required to make up for the failure of Krishna Lila. No? Because in Krishna Lila, Krishna remains with these three desires. No? What's the love that Radha feels for me? What's the beauty that she perceives in me? And what's the happiness she experiences by perceiving that beauty in me? I don't know. I cannot tell, Krishna says. I must enter into her shoes. So Gaur Lila is somehow born from the lotus of the Krishna Lila. As my Guru Maharaj likes to say, a lotus within the lotus, if you will. So, to Mahaprabhu, in that sense, it's Krishna having an experience that he's not having in Krishna Lila, basically. No? Some upgraded experience that in Krishna Lila is not present, in Gaur Lila is attained. No? So sometimes Krishna is called Supreme Person. Of course, we are speaking about the same person, no? So please do not forget that. I'm not just creating some duality. Krishna here, Mahaprabhu here, one versus the other. I mean, it's the same person extending. Now Krishna extending himself so he can experience what he was not able to experience in Vrindavan. And he appeared in Navadvip, which is not different from Vrindavan, but it's extended Vrindavan or Gupta Vrindavan. And Gaur Lila sometimes is called Parishishta Lila. In Sanskrit, Parishishta means, how do you say in English? Appendix. In a book, the appendix or the epilogue. Yeah. No, like the book is closed, finished, but some afterthought comes to make full sense of the whole thing. So Gaur Lila is like that appendix that makes Krishna Lila complete. No? So Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I like to say Mahaprabhu is Supreme Personality of Krishna. Well, actually, sometimes there are different things said about that.
Say something like that.
Sometimes it is mentioned that Bhagavan appeared as Vyasadeva, but more specifically, Srila Rupa Goswami in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, he describes Vyasadeva as Shakti Abhesh Avatar, which is infused with Gyan Shakti. No? Because Shakti Abhesh Avatar means someone who is not Bhagavan, Vishnu Tattva, but who is an empowered soul, unempowered by some particular function, a different, no? Narad Muni is considered also Shakti Abhesh Avatar for Bhakti.
So you would say that about Vrindavan Das Thakur?
Yeah. Basically, following what Rupa Goswami says, we could say that they are empowered personalities. Of course, also when we say Vyasadev, that's another layer to the whole discussion. We know that there are many Vyasas. No, there's no, and the name Vyasa actually is a post. No, like when you see Indra or Brahma, there are so many. No? So Vyasa means compiler. No? And generally we hear that the Vyasa who compiled the Bhagavatam, as we know, is the Krishna Dwaipayana Vyasa. No? So Vyasa is kind of the title, but the personality is Krishna Dwaipayana. So also one can make the case, I don't know, somewhere in Shastra you say Vyasa is Vishnu Tattva, and somewhere you say this Shakti Avesa Avatar. Maybe it refers to one Vyasa here and to another Vyasa there, not necessarily to the same Vyasa in the same case. No, that's not clarifying detail, basically.
So if you say Veda Vyasa, then you know.
Veda Vyasa still is a generic title, no? Because Veda Vyasa means the compiler of the Veda. Vyasa means compiler, and Veda means Veda. No, so the name is specific, that's another thing. So anyhow, the point is that Vyasa, whoever, one of the Vyasas came back from his retirement and wrote in the form of Vrindavan Das Thakur this Chaitanya Bhagavat, no? Like extension of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Gaur Lila, an extension of Krishna Lila. And also, just before finishing, some interesting aspects of Chaitanya Bhagavat. Vrindavan Das Thakur makes very strong emphasis about Vaishnava Aparad. Of course, about avoiding it. Very much, throughout the book, over and over and over again. Of course, we should deal with that not in a neurotic way, because also sometimes I've seen that this idea of offenses can lead to neurosis. And like, oh, I just walk on the shadow of Maharaj, I go to hell for eternity, or something like that. And you are creating your own hell in your mind by thinking like that, and it was not intentional. No? But there's place for aparad, as we spoke a little bit these days. We shouldn't also take it lightly, like, oh, we don't care for aparad. Yeah, one should be careful not to go against, as we say the other day, the hand that is feeding you. Because that can make bhakti retire from our lives. Krishna in the Gita says, as we mentioned these days, neha vikramana asusti pratyabhyayana vidyate, and so on. In this process of bhakti, there's no loss nor diminution. And whatever you obtain remains with you and will protect you even from the highest danger. But, the commentator said, this applies with exception of aparad. If you commit aparad, bhakti may retire. It's not that aparad is more powerful than bhakti, because there is nothing more powerful than bhakti. It is just that bhakti doesn't like to stay in a place where there is aparad. Bhakti Devi herself is not pleased with aparad, so she chooses to retire for the moment while the aparad is there. Of course, if one repents sincerely, then that's the idea. That will invoke that grace back. No? So there is a way to deal with that, of course. Over and over again, we are taught, okay, if we engage in aparad, what to do? It's not that we are condemned for eternity or anything like this, no? If we are sincerely trying to avoid aparad, there's no aparad. And if there has been aparad and we are sincerely trying to counteract aparad, there's place for that. So again, we shouldn't go neurotic about aparad, not thinking at every single moment, I don't want to commit aparad, I don't want to commit aparad, I don't want to commit aparad. Better try to think, I want to lovingly serve the devotees, and I want to be affectionate, and I want to be honest and sincere and humble. The positive side, and that will automatically protect from aparad. So that said, interestingly, while Vrindavan Das Thakur makes this emphasis on aparad and be careful about that and try to be humble and so on, there are a few remarks that are interesting, like a little bit like maybe a little bit confusing for some, where Vrindavan Das Thakur speaks in a quite
strong
way, no? Like, like I'm ready to kick the head of that one who blasphemes Nityananda Prabhu. So if despite what I'm saying, you choose to reject him, I will kick you in your head. I was like, okay, what about that? No? How to process that one? No? Because he's speaking about be careful, be kind, be humble, do not offend. Now he's saying, I will kick your head if you do not choose to accept Nityananda. So like, what? Because on one side we have Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami's humility in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is different. No? Krishna Kaviraj Goswami won't kick the head of anyone. He will say, Jagai Madai Haitimoni Se Papisha Purisira Kitta Haitimoni Se Lagista. I'm more sinful than Jagai Madai, I'm lower than the worm stool, and all these type of extreme expressions that also one has to process in a healthy way. But the point is, he's not saying, I'll kick your head at any moment if you blaspheme here and there, no? But Vrindavan Das Thakur's humility, in this case, at least, is quite different, no? Because for us, so important is Trinada, peace to Nietzsche, and Mahaprabhu saying, be more humble than the blade of grass. So how we understand this in that context? No? How what Vrindavan Das Thakur is saying, I'll kick your head, has to do with Trinada, peace to Nietzsche? For the untrained eye, it may seem actually the opposite. It may seem like this is an exhibition of pride or who knows what. So let me share with you the three insights that were given by our acharyas in this connection before we finish. So, an interesting way of appreciating this also as a sign of very unique type of humility. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says, in connection to this expression of head kicking, for those who had no chance, no possibility of entering into devotional service, by this statement, Vrindavan Thakur has created a path. For those who had no chance of getting any service, Vrindavan Das Thakur has given that chance by kicking them. Of course, the question is, how? I mean, how created a chance or a path by kicking, no? Because we may create a whole new sampradaya and just go out and start kicking the heads of people. Don't know, I'm just creating a chance for these rascals to obtain the which is, of course, who is Vrindavan Das Thakur to begin with, no? So the example given is sometimes like if an attendant or a son of a very well-respected gentleman does wrong to some person, basically, then that person's guardians will come to help their dependent, if you will come in the name of that person. Not like, I don't know, if there is a boss and there is an employee, you see, mm-hmm. and the employee does some mistake, but he's a very nice employee and under the care of the boss, but does some mistake, does something wrong, and becoming, the boss will come to speak with the person. What happened? Okay, I take charge of him. What's going on? So that person, now suddenly is facing the boss. So the logic here is the same. Vrindavan Das Thakur is saying this, I'll kick you in the head. And it's another person who said, what are you saying? He will come. Sorry, what my devotee said. Here I am, Nityananda Prabhu says. What do you need? And he will give mercy. No? So by expressing, I'll kick you in the head, he immediately is calling Nityananda Prabhu to intervene, you say?
Yeah.
Basically, and in the name of his servant, basically. No? So Nitai will have to intervene in the name of Vrindavan Das Thakur. And in this way, Nityananda Prabhu is forced, if you will, to descend and give his grace to this extreme apparatus. Because that statement that Vrindavan Das Thakur was directed to those who choose to offend Nityananda. He was not saying, I will kick the head of anyone and everyone. He said, those who choose to offend Nityananda despite who he is, all that he's giving, I'll kick you in the head. I mean, you really deserve that. And Nityananda Prabhu will appear and say, no, my servant say that, here I am, what do you need? No? Like the famous example with Jai Vijay at the pearly gates in Vaikuntha when the four Kumaras are coming. As you know, I mean, many implications to the Leela, but at one point, Jai Vijay do not allow four Kumaras to enter. Four Kumaras are cursing Jai and Vijay in a big tumult, you see.
Right.
It's there in Vaikuntha, which Vaikuntha is known as the place of no anxiety. So again, some anxiety in the place of non-anxiety was going. So what happens eventually? Vishnu himself appears. Like, what's going on? What happened with my servants? I take full charge of what they did. Something like that. So actually, although overtly it seems Jai and Vijay did wrong, and the Kumaras are better situated than Jai and Vijay, when Vishnu appeared and took full responsibility for his servants, it is said that the four Kumaras, who are pretty smart persons, they realize, oh my God, we have offended them. Because they are so dear to Vishnu, the Bhagavan himself is taking full responsibility for whatever his servants have done. So they are so close to Vishnu. We are not that close. But Vishnu himself is coming out of his throne, out of whatever he was, to the gate just to take full responsibility for his servants. So that speaks about who the servants are. So the four Kumars were like, oh, we have really messed up the whole thing here. It's our fault. So this is the same principle, no? Bhagavan himself, the master, had to come and to intervene. So let me finish with some words by Srila Siddhar Maharaj about this same section. He very nicely describes the background to Vrindavan Das Thakur's attitude. He says, Mahaprabhu's special attention will be drawn towards them, towards those who will be kicked in their heads. That my son, no, the idea will be, my son has done something wrong, some damage to you. Don't take it badly, but forgive and forget now. I am giving something to you. Come, come. No, like when you try to make up for something. Right. In this way, Vrindavan Das Thakur has made a new path by threatening the unbelievers in Gaur Nityananda. By his strong remark of very abusive character, he has given the chance to those fellows to draw the greater and more special attention of the authority. Trinityananda Prabhu. So in this way, no, Srila Prabhupada used also to use some of these expressions, no? With boots, right? More specifically even. Because you can kick in the head barefoot, but with boots, that will be more. And that will draw even more grace from your master. So that, and as we know, when Srila Siddhar Maharaj was with Bhaktisundar Govinda Maharaj, his disciple and eventually his successor Acharya, and Srila Siddhar Maharaj was mentioning how Srila Prabhupada was actually Shaktyavis avatar. We spoke about Shaktyavis avatar regarding Vyas. But Srila Siddhar Maharaj will extend the idea and say Srila Prabhupada was Shaktyavis. No, that was the way also he... Srila Siddhar Maharaj, as we know, at that time he was almost 90 years old. He was blind from one eye. He would not go outside of his room and veranda, basically. But he will receive all this. Of course, he was so close with Srila Prabhupada, and he will hear about all these things that were happening in Prabhupada's campaign, all this like miraculous unfolding of Mahaprabhu's message. So he was a very introspective and thoughtful personality. So he really thought about the background of all this, how to explain this, no? Because it has such a dimension. It's like, so he naturally came to this conclusion. It cannot but be Shaktyavis avatar, he said. No? According to what Shastra said and the level of empowerment you need for such a result, there has to be some specific empowerment. So he said, Prabhupada, this is Shaktyavis avatar. No, nowadays, many devotees may describe Prabhupada as such, but this idea came originally from Srila Siddhar Maharaj's veranda. So when he said that, his disciple, Bhaktisundar Govinda Maharaj, he asked, on which type of abhish? Because as we mentioned, there are different types of empowerment. No? Jnana abhish, bhakti abhish, no? Different types of functions that Bhagavan is investing some power in that person for. So when Srila Siddhar Maharaj was asked, which type of abhish? Srila Siddhar Maharaj said, Nityananda abhish. Interesting. Srila Prabhupada is especially empowered by Nityananda Prabhu. And this can refer in many ways and has so many applications. To begin with, Nityananda Prabhu is going to the, downtrodden people of society, the worst possible situation, and giving Mahaprabhu and giving the highest grace, you know, to Srila Prabhupada began his campaign in the West, basically. I was just there. Yeah, I was there at Tompkins Square Park some months ago and some other times before, and it remains as 60 years ago. It's full of homeless people, drug addicts, and all this. And many of them were telling me, I was there when Srila Prabhupada, when your guru did, and there were people who were there with Prabhupada. I was like, oh my gosh, where are you? You don't have an idea where you are, I was thinking. No? And that tree there, I mean, who is that tree? Whatever. So the point is, if you analyze, and Srila Siddhar Maharaj did this exercise, he analyzed Srila Prabhupada's campaign in detail, although he was at far from physical distance, but from the news he got, he analyzed. oh, this is unfolding in a very unique way, very similar to Nityananda Prabhu's campaign. No? So, and of course, Srila Prabhupada show an affinity towards Sakya Bhav. Nityananda Prabhu is there, Gaur Nitai everywhere. And also, let's kick them in the head with boots. That's also pretty much in the line of Vrindavan Das Thakur and invoking the grace of Nityananda Prabhu again to come and say, no, 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 forget what my beloved servants say of the boots and all. Here I am. What do you need? Okay, here you have costless grace, costless mercy. So anyhow, some words we wanted to share today in connection to Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur's Tirubhav Mahotsav. And I don't know, if you have any questions, we may have a few minutes before finishing.
I was also thinking, he sounds a lot like a cowherd boy, you know what I mean? I mean, cowherd boys are
from
Vrindavan Das and Prabhupada. Mm. You know, they sound like a cowherd boy. They're kind of being bombastic and kind of loud and boastful, you know. But it's all a big kind of joke. It's all hasha.
Yeah, there is a particular side of their Baba which is called Judabira. Judabira, which has to do with like heroism and this like chivalry, you say? Chivalry?
Chivalry.
No. And Prabhupada was quite into that. So, of course, you can analyze that from the perspective of his human personality, if you will, but of course, we know that someone like Prabhupada was. Not only that, of course, there is a human dimension even to the pure devotee, and that's charming, but also there is the transcendental dimension in the sense of his inner affinity, his identity in the lila, and how the details of that identity may express it themselves through their pastimes here. No? So this is an example of that. It's not just, oh, Prabhupada just like to speak strongly about some things, but he was a... internally he had a Gopa identity, and part of his composition in Sakyaras is like psyche, transcendental psyche, has to do with this element of Judabira, which is this chivalry mode and wrestling and with words, and so there are hints about who he is ultimately. No? I'm saying this because you can just take that and reduce that to, you can even be disturbed by that. I think why he's speaking strong, that strongly so many times that you can even like see that as something ordinary. Or you can connect that in such a way that he's speaking about who is he ultimately in the extraordinary realm of the lila. No? So.
He's also in the lila, isn't he? I mean, he's right there with Nityananda. He's in the lila, mm-hmm. So it's not mm-hmm. like he's, you know, he's living, he's writing it. He's
living
the lila.
Yeah.
He's there with him.
Yeah. Yeah, Gaur.
He's getting very fired up about it, you know. That's what Prabhupada would be very fired up, you know.
Yeah, but it's, I was reading the other day, I took the Sikshamrita of Prabhupada, which is a compendium of letters, and right. I've read already the past sometimes, but I started to read it again, the section where there are many letters in connection to his god brothers.
Oh, yeah.
And again, it's interesting because you have to really understand his expressions because the letters are like chronologically present. So in some letters, he will speak very strongly about some good brother.
Right.
And maybe a few months after, or 1 year after, he's speaking so lovingly to that good brother. No? So you have to really put everything on the scale, not just say, oh no, he said this about him, so it's a demon. But then in the other letter, he's speaking... And you say, or he's being hypocrite and being dualistic, or maybe what he spoke strongly was actually not that strongly as we can read it from here, and he actually loves him, but they're brothers, so sometimes brothers fight with each other. That's an important point, because Prabhupada said very strong things about many good brothers, but many nice things about them equally as well. So and the point, brothers fight with each other, but it doesn't mean they stop loving each other. It's important the disciples be careful not to interfere with that and start to act expressing the same way that the guru is doing with his or her brothers and sisters.
He really, there were times when Prabhupada really got on his disciples' case for interfering. You know, there's a famous example of when he was, when Tirtha Maharaj passed away,
mm-hmm.
You know, like this Dharma Maharaj is right hand man, so he's been mm-hmm. personally organized everything. And this was in like 1976 or something like that. So it was quite late in the when Prabhupada was there. But some of the sannyasis had started politicking about something that was going on in the yoga piece. And Prabhupada, when he found out, was just furious. He was just completely furious with them because he said that you don't actually understand what's going on. You just see something, you hear people talk, but you don't actually understand what's going on.
Mm.
As regards God brothers, amongst God brothers, there's a particular mood.
Mm.
And even though you might think, well, that isn't right or that isn't right, you're like a child.
Mm.
You're a baby there.
Mm.
So you just stay out of that and don't.
Mm.
He really was furious with
them. Yeah. Many times he says something to that effect, like he was saying something strong and some other devotee kind of parrot the same thing. He said,
right.
No, I can say that, you cannot say that. No. I can say that, you shouldn't say that. That's another platform of discussion. So, yes, there are different considerations as to how to relate with Vaishnavas and different degrees of seniority and Vaishnava etiquette and aparad and all the things. So it's important that in time we get also educated about these delicate dealings, because relationships between Vaishnavas are very subtle and delicate, and it may, again, as we said the other day, it's difficult to understand the Vaishnava. So we may think we got it and we are totally misreading the whole thing.
People change also, things happen, people change. So you've got to even, we're at the end of the day, we are people.
Mm-hmm.
Some mechanical machine. We may be Nityananda Vish, but still, we have our own personality.
Mm-hmm.
We're not Nityananda.
Mm-hmm.
Nityananda Vish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different thing,
Mm-hmm.
So.
Any other question? Question, comments? Okay, so we can leave here. It's almost 1 hour, 8 minutes, so 108. I'm speechless to close here. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Gaur Nityananda ki jai, Sri Sri Brajanath Haladar ki jai, Sri Srimha Bhagavan ki jai, Tirubab Mahotsav Titi Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur Mahasaya ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanand.